Welcome to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases the stories and radio productions from this and many other community radio stations across the country. I'm Evan Davis with the Columbus Community Radio Foundation in Columbus, Ohio. Today on Sprouts, we're going to take a look at the state of election integrity in Ohio, the state whose electoral votes gave George Bush the margin of victory over his presidential rival John Kerry in 2004. But was that election stolen, as many now claim, or was Ohio's election simply fraught with error, voting machine failures, administrative boondoggles, and mass confusions, as most now acknowledge? And if so, can the curious pattern in which the overwhelming majority of such errors favored one particular candidate be explained? We'll speak with several prominent voting rights activists and election investigators, and we'll hear an excerpt from a recent interview I did with Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney on the question of mobilizing the African-American vote to preserve voting rights for all. We'll start with Peg Rosenfield, election specialist for the Ohio League of Women Voters, which is a plaintiff in a historic lawsuit charging the state with a pattern of criminal mishandling of elections over the last 25 years. Here's a quote from the text of that legal complaint. Plaintiffs in the lawsuit allege that those responsible for administering Ohio's elections are, quote, continuing to promulgate and maintain a voting system in Ohio that denies the meaningful and equal exercise of the right to vote by using non-uniform standards, practices, and rules, and that employs untrained or improperly trained personnel, and that has wholly inadequate systems, procedures, and funding necessary to ensure the meaningful and equal exercise of the right to vote. As a direct result, for years, the right of all eligible Ohioans to cast a meaningful ballot has been severely burdened and in some cases denied altogether.
The election system is really dysfunctional. The boards of elections at each county are not getting the direction they need from the Secretary of State so that the rules will be consistent throughout the whole state. I think it's called equal protection. Poll workers were given confusing instructions. I believe the Secretary of State issued a corrective directive in the middle of the day on Election Day. Well, there's no way for poll workers to know about that.
Rosenfield says that Ohio's upcoming election in November of this year will be hampered by additional impediments posed by a recently adopted state legislation, a sweeping set of election reforms known as House Bill 3, passed last January by the Republican-controlled legislature along a strict party-line vote.
We started off trying to fix it when it was first being heard, because it did have some good things in it. But when we were unable to get the legislature to address the concerns we had, we ended up opposing it because we really believe the effect of it has been voter suppression. There are numbers of things in it that will make it very difficult, more difficult for people to vote. There are restrictions on how you can do voter registration drives. There are restrictions, well, the requiring ID of every voter and only very specific kinds of ID will seem to have a particularly difficult effect on low-income people, on very young voters, on the elderly. It's disproportionate, and it will make it more difficult for people to vote. They took out the only provision that had been in it for auditing, and we just think that if you take a lot of these pieces individually, it's more difficult to register. It's more difficult to get petitions signed. Everything is more difficult to make access to voting more difficult. And that when you take them all together, yes, we believe it will suppress the votes. Their reasons given was that they were trying to prevent fraud. Last year, the people at Ohio and the League did a survey calling all the 88 county boards, talking to the director or the deputy director, asking them about fraud in their county. And they came up with 4 instances of real fraud, voting fraud, out of the last 2 general elections. It's something like 9 million votes.
And that's voting fraud, that is fraud caused by individual voters, as opposed to election fraud, which refers to a whole range of possible violations of election laws.
Yes, that's exactly right. That if there are real problems in the system, it is not with voter fraud. Voting fraud is the kind that we all heard about in the bad old days of people stuffing ballot boxes and things like that. No, this is where somebody came in and voted illegally. 4 out of 9 million votes. It did not seem to us as justified the kinds of restrictions they enacted. Their answer to that is, well, there was probably lots more and we just didn't count it, or didn't catch it, I'm sorry. I don't believe it.
Ohio Secretary of State Ken Blackwell has also issued additional rules related to voter registration, which many nonprofit groups that usually conduct voter registration drives in election years say are having a dampening effect on their efforts. Sean Tucker is with the Ohio chapter of the People for the American Way. I spoke with him at a voter education meeting in Cleveland, sponsored by the Greater Cleveland Voter Coalition.
One of the issues was that a person had to directly, who filled out the voter registration card, had to directly take the card themselves to the County Board of Election or to the Secretary of State's office. What this does, and they're talking about fraud, this eliminates the possibility of quality control measures, because now you have to directly take it to the Board of Election, the person who fills it out, within a 10-day period of time, and so you can't check and see if they claim a Mickey Mouse or Donald Duck was actually on a voter registration card. So it really eliminates the quality control measures that organizations like the NAACP has been doing, you know, for decades, when, you know, we were intimidated at the polls and from participating in the voter registration process. And they worked to get more African-Americans out to the ballot box. And so that eliminates all types of broad-based voter registration. Also, what it does is it makes you take an online training exam. And one may say, well, you know, why not? You know, these people should be trained to be registrars here in the state of Ohio. But essentially what you're doing is you're creating almost like a driver's license, in my view, to be able to register people in the state of Ohio. I took the exam. I went into the Secretary of State's website, took the exam. But there's a digital divide here, okay? So we're talking about people who don't have access to computers, who don't have access to the internet, having to go online to take this online training exam, and there's no alternative. And so you can't get it mailed to you by the Secretary of State's office. We asked him, and he said, no, you have to take it online. And so that creates a class system, you know, folks who don't have access to computers to take this online training exam. And then you get back what's called an affirmation. You have to send the affirmation in, then you're registered to vote. Essentially, what this is it's a solution looking for a problem. The League of Women Voters did a study, and they only found 4 cases of voter fraud, and I think it was like 9 million vote casts. Don't quote me on that, but it was over like an 8 or 9 year period. Only 4 cases of voter fraud. And so even, let's look at it like this. Even if you have folks who are going to be registered to Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck, but it's no indication that these people, even if somebody does slip through the crack, they're not going to the polls and voting. And so this is certainly a voter suppression bill. Whether the intent was voter registration or not, I don't question that, but we know what the end result is, and the end result is certainly voter suppression.
What effect so far has the passage of House Bill 3 and these new voter registration restrictions had on voter registration efforts here in the Cleveland area? And do you think it's enough already to make a difference in the 2006 election?
I can give you an immediate sort of repercussion, if you will. I mean, folks are afraid. Folks are afraid because now they're facing a fifth-degree felony for just participating in a civic process. You know, this is something we learned in civics class, you know, register to vote. But now you have a fifth-degree felony, which is, I believe, $2,500 and 6 months in jail for a college student or a retired individual trying to register one to vote. And if they do it wrong, they're going to be a fifth-degree felon. So initially what we've had a lot of people back off. It certainly cut back. Initially it halted our voter registration drive for about 2 months. And then we got it going again. And what happened is that a lot of individuals who we had on board, we work with a lot of churches, a lot of faith-based organizations to get out into the African-American community, because African-American community is always relied heavily on the church. And so we use this as a vehicle to go out and register not only members within our congregation, but members in their immediate communities as well. And a lot of those pastors have backed off, and a lot of those members have backed off because they said, you know, we don't want to be faced with the felony.
Also included in Ohio's new election laws is a voter ID requirement, similar to that of Georgia, which was recently overruled on a constitutional ground by a federal district court. Dr. Bob Fitrakis, publisher of the Columbus Free Press and author of several books concerning voting rights and election fraud, explained the potential impact of the new ID requirements.
Ohio is now in a process of essentially deliberately shrinking the electorate. That is, the Republican Party, which controls the state house, and J. Kenneth Blackwell, the Secretary of State, as the popularity, and I think it's directly correlated to the popularity of President Bush, as his popularity falls, there appears to be an attempt to make it more difficult for minorities in the inner city, poor people, working poor, elderly, to vote. I mean, the most obvious is the ID requirements. The fact that we now you now have to bring ID to the polls, and if you don't have that ID, you can do other things like a government check and or a bank account. But the problem there is they're only going to send one letter. Yeah, from the Board of Elections. That's their campaign as of right now. So a letter shows up in your house. Many people will ignore it, not really read it. So a lot of people will probably show up on election day and not be aware that they're required to have ID. One of the more obvious repressive aspects of it is that if you go down and register to vote or register to vote and you're approved, is that your voter ID card issued by the Board of Elections does not count as proof. So if you hear there's ID that's required and you naturally grab your voter ID card from the county board of elections, in the law, that does not count that you're registered to vote, even though it's the proof given by the county board of elections. The state really doesn't create any affirmative programs to create a voter ID card with a picture. It's not going into assisted living and nursing homes where our most vulnerable and elderly live, who often don't drive and don't need a driver's license. As the New York Times suggested, this is like a poll tax. So part of that process is that things are getting much more difficult in Ohio. And then you've got the problem with provisional ballots on election day. Those disproportionately occur in the urban areas in heavily minority districts. In fact, one of the best predictor would be a majority district of minorities. Any district that, you know, more than 50% of the population is a minority, you can have a large amount of provisional ballots rejected.
Stood in lines outside, 3 hours, maybe four. A rainy November 2nd, 2004. All across our nation, too many to ignore. We turned out in numbers they'd never seen before. I should know, dear, I've been voting here since the Second World War. My name is Amos Connolly. Now they're telling me my vote don't matter anymore. They took my name, they purged it from the roll. What they gained cannot compare with what they stole. This is my democracy. Don't you go telling me my vote don't matter anymore and is not worth fighting for.
That was My Vote Don't Matter Anymore by Ohio singer-songwriter Victoria Parks. You're listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program produced by this community radio station and many others across the country. While limiting voter registration and restricting voter access are one side of Ohio's election conundrum, what happens to the votes after they're cast? Most Ohio counties now have installed electronic voting machines, some from the Ohio-based Diebold Corporation, and questions have been raised as to both the security and accuracy of these machines. A recent study conducted in Cuyahoga County by the California-based Election Science Institute revealed that the vote totals produced by Diebold machines there differed from the data on the machine's memory cards, and that both of these totals did not match the tallies of the paper printouts produced by those same machines, thus calling into question the validity of the vote totals for that whole county. Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney of Georgia has been an outspoken critic of the electronic voting machines.
Unfortunately, today what we have is a Diebold democracy. Our democracy has been privatized to a corporation that doesn't even share its software, its codes, the construction of its machines and the way votes are tabulated with the people who pay them to do that. And so I would have to say that our democracy is in peril right now.
Bob Fitrakis concurs. He and other investigators have also conducted independent audits of some of the electronic voting machines being used currently in Ohio.
Out of all these sources, the last one on earth, I would believe, is Diebold, in part because they believe in non-transparency, and they're using proprietary software. I would not take their word. When we've audited machines throughout Ohio, what we found in those scenarios is there's about a 5% variation between the paper trail and the tabulated computer or software results, whether it's OptiScan or otherwise. We're finding about a 5 percentage point variation, which could throw virtually, you know, any close election.
As for the 2004 federal election, which was conducted on both electronic voting machines, paper punch cards, and optical scan ballots in the state of Ohio, the results are no more trustworthy, according to investigator Richard Hayes Phillips, who has been conducting a forensic examination of the election records in various counties throughout the state. He's discovered numerous irregularities, not only in the data the records contain, but also in the handling of the evidence by election officials.
There isn't one county I have been to where I can vouch for the validity of the paper. None of these counties stored their ballots and voter signature books in a secure location. There is supposed to be two keys to the door, one held by a Republican and one held by a Democrat, so that no one party has access to the records. And in county after county, I have found this not to be so. The one thing I can tell you for sure in all the counties in which I've investigated the forensic evidence is that the results are not verifiable. The boards of election cannot demonstrate that the results are true and correct. And that's a serious problem. That's as serious as outright fraud, because we cannot have faith in the electoral process.
Phillips, a political independent who sees voting rights and election integrity as ultimately more important than who is declared the winner in any given election, described some of his findings in Ohio, which illustrate what he says are some very disturbing patterns.
I am looking for the truth. At a minimum, I am doing this for the record. If I am only chronicling the fall of the American Republic, so be it. But I like to think that it can be rescued, that there is something precious here. Something that inspired the founders and is worth preserving. And when every discrepancy but a precious few help George W. Bush and hurt John Kerry, you have to be a coincidence theorist to dismiss the mountain of evidence. For example, provisional ballots in Hamilton County. 95% of the rejected provisional ballots came from Cincinnati, where only a third of the voters reside. The voters who were challenged after the voter rolls were purged in Lucas County, the vast majority of them came from four wards in Toledo that had gone 85%. For Kerry. In Cuyahoga County, when the voter rolls were purged, there was a clear pattern targeting the wards where Al Gore had done well in 2000. And now it has been revealed in Rolling Stone magazine that the targeting was actually done according to zip code. This is an outright violation of the Voting Rights Act. You cannot target certain areas for purging, for deleting people from the voter rolls because you don't like their voting pattern. And nearly every case where the presidential vote is extremely anomalous or irregular compared to previous elections or other elections happening on that day, John Kerry performs much more poorly than one would expect. One of the classic examples is the Connolly anomaly. Ellen Connolly, you might know her, she's from Cleveland. She was an underfunded African-American municipal judge, among other things, a gay rights advocate. And she managed to get more votes than John Kerry in 12 counties out of 88. Not just a bigger percentage of the vote, more votes. Now, mind you, that doesn't happen with down-ticket races. The presidential race drew 1.2 million more votes statewide than the Chief Justice race. Both were competitive. Kerry got 49%. Connolly got 47%. He should have gotten more votes than her in every single county. And if you look at all the counties that were carried by Bush, in the 12 suspect counties, which you can see in a map in Rolling Stone magazine, I gave them the data. In the 12 suspect counties, Ellen Connolly got 43%. In the other 61 counties carried by Bush, Ellen Connolly got 43%. There was no difference in her performance from one set of counties to the other. So why did John Kerry do so poorly in those 12 counties? Looked at another way, if you do a ratio of Bush votes to Moyer, the Republican Chief Justice, or Kerry votes compared to Connolly, the Democratic challenger, they're about equal in those other 61 counties. Bush runs ahead of the down-ticket Republican. Kerry runs ahead of the down-ticket Democrat, just as you would expect. But in the 12 suspect counties, Bush gets 1.5 times as many votes as Moyer, and Kerry can't get as many votes as Connolly. I don't believe the results are true and correct. It appears that as many as 60,000 votes could have been shifted in those 12 counties alone, which is the margin of victory that affects the margin by 120,000 votes. And I have forensic evidence from the ballots to show that it is a very high number. There were also several counties where Bush got more votes than issue one, the constitutional amendment prohibiting gay marriage or anything resembling it. In order for that to happen, there had to be thousands and thousands of voters who voted for gay marriage and for George Bush. And there would be some. Surely there's people in both parties who are tolerant. But not so many as these counties' results would indicate. When you start looking at the ballots and see how each person is reported to have voted, the numbers become incredible, almost impossible.
Hayes, Fetrakis, Rosenfield, and others have noted that the obstacles to voter enfranchisement in Ohio, whether the result of policies and practices in force on or before Election Day, or which stem from the processing of the data after the polls close, appear to have a disproportionate effect on poor Latino, Native American, and African American voters. This, in fact, is one of the central complaints in the Ohio League of Women Voters lawsuit. Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney agrees and offers her perspective.
The powers that be have always been threatened by the true rainbow coalition of black people and white people and all kinds of people from different ethnicities and backgrounds and religions all coming together to make America a better place. That's why we understand from the reading of the COINTELPRO papers, the counterintelligence program papers, that their greatest fear was in fact that black leaders would be able to attract white support. And so first and foremost, they had to use the power of the media to discredit black leaders. And in so doing, they would encourage whites to shy away from that kind of black leadership that was going to demand a better America for everybody, not just for black America, but for all Americans. And so think back on what President Kennedy said when he talked about peace. And he said, what kind of peace do we want? Not a Pax Americana built on America's weapons of war, but a peace for all people, for all men and women, a peace for all time. And that is what the base ideas of America are all about. A peace for all time and an America that gets along with the rest of the world. And so if you have good thinking Americans who are willing to listen to good, active black leadership and other leadership, minority leadership in general, and fashion public policy that addresses those real basic concerns, then we have an America that respects itself, respects its people, and respects the people of the world. That's what the powers that be are mightily afraid of. And that's why we have to work extra hard to make that happen.
Jocelyn Travis, director of the nonprofit voter education group Ohio Votes, encourages fortitude for Ohio's disaffected voters and sees increased diligence and participation as the ultimate solution.
I think that people have to realize now that a lot of these issues and problems that we're being confronted with is because we have people in office that don't care about our issues and needs. And so eventually we have to understand the need to put people in office that do care, that do have the commitment, that do have the understanding of the issues that affect our community and can really bring about a change. So at this point, we need to critically look at who is running for office, look at their history, look at what they have done, not what they're promising they're going to do. Look at their track record. Put in, at this point, if it means choosing the lesser of the evils, then we must do that. And then hold that elected official accountable. So if they're not doing what they need to do, then let's vote them out and get somebody in there that is going to handle and take care of the business of this community.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to an independent elections report from Ohio. Our interviewees this week included Peg Rosenfield, Sean Tucker, Bob Fitrakis, Richard Hayes Phillips, the Honorable Cynthia McKinney, and Jocelyn Travis. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by the Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at Ursula, that's URSULA at Pacifica.org. Again, that's Ursula at Pacifica.org. I'm Evan Davis with the Columbus Community Radio Foundation in Columbus, Ohio. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week on Sprouts. Yeah, he's so sad.